Oh, it's such an honor, Danny, to be a part of this amazing podcast you're doing here. And it's just really cool to be talking about this book.
You know my work and you've given it a lot of thought, and I don't normally get such good questions, to be honest.
That was so fun.
Yeah, it sure was, especially the quiz. Thanks for preparing that for me.
Thank you for your wonderful questions.
Best when these things just turn into a conversation.
Yeah. Oh, I love it. Yeah, you obviously got the book.
Good on you for fighting the good fight too.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you, guys.
I love your enthusiasm. I just think it's a brilliant thing you're doing, a podcast about, you know, books, and you do a lot of great interviews, so I'm really honoured to be part of it.
I so enjoy listening to the podcast. I truly, I love it.
You're listening to Words and Nerds Podcast with Danny V.
Helen Shorer is the YA fantasy author of the best-selling novel Heart of Mist and the upcoming sequel Reign of Mist. Both books are part of the action-packed trilogy The Ormeer Chronicles. Helen is also the founding editor of Writers Edit, an online literary magazine and learning platform for emerging writers. It is now one of the largest writers' platforms in the world. Today we talk about Reign of Mist. You can also catch Helen in episode 8, chatting about Heart of Mist. Before we start the interview, I do want to give a shout out to enthusiastic listeners who have mentioned or liked the podcast on social media. Huge shout out and thank you to Nathan Phillips at NathanJP86 if you wanted to follow him, brilliant author Adrian Beck, fellow podcaster Conversations with Writers, and SummerLily_Mass. So thank you so much for your support.
Hi, Helen. It's so lovely to chat with you again. For new listeners, this is your second time on the podcast. We spoke about your first novel, Heart of Mist, in episode 8.
Yeah, it's super exciting. Thanks for having me back. I remember I had such an awesome time the last time I spoke to you and Chris, so I was really keen to jump back on the show and chat to you again.
Yeah, it's so good to have a follow-up because we talked a lot about Heart of Mist, so I can't wait to talk about Reign of Mist, which I enjoy just as much, the second book of the series. You know, it's fantasy, it's action-packed, and it's so great and so full of those great characters who I kind of missed after not spending any time with them for a year.
Well, that's good. I haven't missed them at all.
I was about to say, how is it different for you because you haven't had a break from these characters? And how much more depth did you get from their backgrounds or depth of character because you haven't had a break from them?
Yeah, it's a weird one. It depends what day you ask me. Like sometimes I'm just so obviously because you work on it. Well, I work on this series pretty much every day. It's been around for what feels like forever for me. So I feel like I've got a really good, like, kind of core understanding of the characters. I like to think I know them pretty well by this point. But it's funny because they do keep, like, kind of unfolding for me in many ways. Like, you know, new situations present themselves and a character still manages to somehow surprise me. It sounds really weird because people are like, you're the author, you're making this stuff up. But they kind of do, you know, have a mind of their own. Like, for instance, you know, in the second book, so for those who don't know, Bleak, the main character, is an alcoholic, and in the second book she's presented with a bunch of kind of temptations or, you know, horrible situations which make her want to have a drink and kind of relapse, which, you know, is a common occurrence in addiction, obviously. But, you know, I always kind of thought she was gonna fold to that, she was gonna give in to that temptation, and she doesn't, which I found quite surprising. Or Swinton, like, finally opening up about his experiences. So for me, it's kind of important that these characters develop organically, and that the most important thing for me is that they grow and they undergo some sort of change. And I hope that happens in the second book, and that it continues to happen in the third book. It's as a reader, like, I find it boring if a character can't surprise me, and, you know, it's sort of the same as an author. If the characters aren't surprising me, maybe they're not going to surprise the reader. So it's kind of a red flag there.
It must mean the characters are so complex because, I mean, as human beings, what we do from one day to the next and the decisions we make, they may not always be consistent, you know, based on our moods or what's just happened, or maybe we've grown or developed. So I think that's a really interesting way to approach the characters because they must feel so real to you now.
Yeah, it's weird. It's just I can't really describe it other than it's just weird. I think also because I write these, I think we talked about it briefly the last time we spoke, but I write these prequel short stories. So stories that are focused on one of the point of view characters from the novel that takes place before book one. And it's, for me, this is like a really interesting exercise in building their backstory and kind of learning about how earlier life events affect the present day character. And it's little things like that that, you know, a character might have a trait, and I've always known they've had a trait. And then I go to do one of these prequel stories and I go, oh, that's why they're like this. And it's just all a bit surreal. It sounds a bit crazy, but such is being an author, I think.
I love the prequels. I think they just add so much, because often when you read a book, you want to know more about maybe those characters that aren't developed as much, or, you know, have a little bit of a side arc about them. And you're like, oh, they're really interesting and I'm curious about them. So I think that's really cool that you do that.
Oh, awesome. I really enjoy doing them. Like, it's really fun for me exploring that. And especially now as I'm getting towards the end of the series. And so I publish three prequels a year. So it basically gives readers in between the books kind of like a little teaser or a little taste of that kind of world and those characters in between the books, because it is a year in between each book. And like especially as I'm heading towards the third and final book in the series and I'm planning these prequels, I'm having a lot of fun like doing some kind of foreshadowing and like hinting at things to come. And it's, yeah, I'm feeling very like kind of mischievous when I'm doing it, so it's quite fun for me.
And how much of a character's backstory, thinking back to Heart of Mist, how much of your character's backstory or, you know, arc, the way you thought they would go, has changed since the new novel and even the third one? You know, did you kind of think a character was going in a certain direction and then suddenly they went in another one?
Oh, that's a tricky question. I think so for Bleak, Swinton and Henry, I very much had a solid understanding of not so much like where they'd end up, but kind of how I'd feel about everything at the end of the third book and kind of how I wanted them to make the reader feel. But with Dash, I mean, you've read Reign of Mist, you know, his kind of character art takes a very kind of unconventional turn. That definitely surprised me. When I started Heart of Mist and the prequels and that, I did not see that coming. And then it kind of unfolded as I was writing Reign of Mist, and then suddenly it felt really natural and it made a lot of sense for then where I wanted him to be in book three.
I love Dash. I mean, I hate to have favourite characters and I do like them all, but I don't know, there's something about Dash that I just really loved.
You're not the first person who said that to me, actually. He's it's funny, Dash is a big favourite, and Fiore, Captain Murphidias, is another big favourite, though I think that's for a different reason.
What was different writing the second or even third book, not that that's released yet, but what's been different about each experience writing each novel in the series?
A funny thing, I think I've talked a little bit about this to some of my other writing friends. You know what, I went into book two thinking, I've already written one book and I've got all the foundations down. I've got all the characters down. This is not going to be easy, but I went into it thinking, yeah, I got this. And halfway through the book, I was like, what the hell am I doing? Like it was so, so challenging. I think I found it such a struggle because A, I didn't do as much planning as now I realize I probably should have, you know, for future series, I'm going to have everything mapped out to a T before I put pen to paper or, you know, start typing chapter one. With this series, I didn't do as much as that as I think I should have. But what really kind of got me were two things. I think one was the fact that, to my surprise, Heart of Mist did really quite well for a debut indie fantasy novel. And I had a lot of people emailing me, asking about the second book, like, you know, telling me what they wanted to happen. And there became this pressure there that wasn't there with the first book. Like the first book, I put it out there. Obviously, I put a lot of effort into doing marketing and making sure it fell into the right hands of, you know, people who liked that genre and things like that. But, you know, at the end of the day, I hit publish and went, well, whatever happens, happens, you know. And the success of that book enabled me to become a full-time author. And so then when I was putting Reign of Mist out, and I imagine it's going to be very much the same for the third book, it was kind of like, oh, my God, what if I stuff this up? Like, I'm essentially living my dream, but what if it was a fluke? What if, you know, everybody hates book two? Like, that kind of thing. And the second issue I kind of had was that, you know, book one was out there. Everything, every detail in that book was in print. I couldn't change anything. So a lot of the time as I was writing the second book, I kind of felt like I'd written myself into a corner and I couldn't, like, you know, erase something in book one, change it, and then find the solution in book two. I just had to find the solution, and that happened so many times. And I imagine it probably will happen even if you do plan out stuff to a T, you know, things change. But I definitely felt that pressure from the outside, also pressure from myself. I put a lot of pressure on myself. But then, it was just very frustrating, you know, thinking I'd come up with this great idea for this great plot point or something. I'm like, oh, I can't do that because in book one this happened, or this person is on a different continent and they need to be on this continent, like things like that. So that was what made that writing experience very, very different from the first one. And, yeah, I've just sent the third book off to beta readers, and the process of getting through that was quite similar to the second book, just in the sort of similar challenges that I came up against.
And how did you keep track of all the things that happened in book one? Because obviously you can remember some points, but were there points where you had to keep going back and reading, or was there a way that you kept track of this?
It's really hard. Like, and the thing that you always forget is, so a reader will read that final version. They read one version. I read and wrote I don't know how many versions of Heart of Mist. So not only is the challenge to kind of keep track of where everybody is, what they've gone through, who they're friends with, who they don't like, blah, 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 but it's also challenging to remember, like, what version of the story you're thinking about. Mm. So, you know, I'll be writing book two and I'll be like, oh, yeah, this person's here, they're with this person, and I'll realize, actually, no, in the final version they ended up somewhere totally different. So it's, I mean, I have a big spreadsheet where I plot out, like, the events, like the core events in each chapter. So that's my first point of, like, trying to check where people are and what people are doing. But if worse comes to worse, I'm just control finding stuff in my Word doc or my typeset pages, just trying to, you know, kind of work it all out. And I think, like, part of you is tempted to be like, yeah, I know that. It's just in my head, but no, it's not. The first book, I think, was 108,000 words. The second book, I think, was 116,000 words. Like, it's just too much detail to keep all in your head. So, yeah, it's very, very hard. I also find keeping – so I've got a physical copy of each book on my desk. So when I'm writing, sometimes I find it easier to just flip through it, and because I'll have a general sense, like, where something is in the book. So I'll try, like, flip through and find it, and reading it in print and, like, in my hands sometimes makes a big difference rather than just trying to find stuff in a spreadsheet or try and find something in a Word document. But at the end of the day, it's just all very hard work. Yeah,
sounds like it. I'm imagining this huge, like, visual wall of one of your maps and, you know, little pretend characters going all around so you can keep track of them.
That would be so useful. Why don't I do that? I could just print off, like, a massive version of the map and that's have, like, right, pins for every character.
Yeah, I'm thinking that every character could be a little different color or something. I think, yeah, that'd be cool.
Oh, that's actually a great idea. I'm going to take that.
If you do that, can you put it on Twitter? I want to see it.
Yeah, no, well, as long as it has no spoilers, I'll do that.
Oh, that's true. Just send it to me because I have this vision of this amazing wall.
Well, I've always meant to, because I think the map in Heart of Mist, and actually it grows in Reign of Mist, like, little bits and pieces are more revealed in Reign of Mist in the map at the front. And I've always meant to get it printed off just because That's pretty cool. Like, yeah. There's a map of the realm in my book, but I just haven't got around to it yet, unfortunately.
Well, here you go. Here's your inspiration.
Yeah. Okay. It's on my to-do list.
Now, you were saying that the first book was really successful and, you know, debut indie author. And you said you put the book into the right hands and did all that marketing. I think I'm really curious about how you did that. You know, how did you get the book in the right hands? What kind of marketing did you do? Because it's really remarkable to have that kind of success with a first book without that publisher and that marketing money behind you.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I mean, I say really successful. I mean, it, you know, wasn't on the New York Times or anything, but
not yet.
No. Well, but I mean, it did hit number one on Amazon, and it actually sometimes still does, like well over a year on from when it came out. I think I'm pretty lucky. Well, not lucky. I mean, I did a lot of hard work, but I mean, I'm lucky in that a lot of my previous jobs have involved some sort of marketing, social media, that kind of thing. So I didn't necessarily go into this experience without any prior knowledge about marketing. But a lot of what I learned is self-taught, and it's just a matter of looking up like what other successful indie authors are doing and. Can I do that? Does that apply to my audience? Like, how can I tweak that to suit my book, which is obviously different to their book sort of thing? I did a lot of outreach marketing. So basically contacting bloggers, contacting podcasts like yourself, contacting pretty much anybody who had anything to do with YA fantasy. I think in that first year, I must have contacted over 500 people or so in that first initial period, asking for them to accept ARCs, asking for them to host me on interviews and things like that. It's a massive task, and it's quite daunting because a lot of publications and a lot of reviewers and stuff don't necessarily want indie authors. You know, they've got, you know, the big five or whatever offering them you know, massive releases from well-known authors, and obviously with good reason they're prioritized. So it was definitely hard trying to put that first foot in the door. All the same people who had taken a chance on Heart of Mist and went, hey, you know what, Reign of Mist is out, do you want to do something with that sort of thing? And you know what, the blogger community, particularly the Aussie blogger community, and also the blogger community in the Philippines, they're all super lovely, and they're so accepting, and you know, just they'll take a chance, and once they're on board, they're like fully on board.
Now, the second book continues immediately from the previous book. Why did you make the decision to continue without a break in the action?
Probably because I've never really been a huge fan of either the big break, where, because I feel like as a reader, if I'm reading a fantasy, a fast-paced fantasy, I've had to wait a year for the next one. I don't want to skip like 3 months, a year in the story or something. Like, I want to know what happened then and there. So I feel like I've also never really been a huge fan of like recaps, like big recaps in a series. Like, so, you know, they spend the first chapter being like, and this person, you know, is this person, and their history is this, and last book this happened. Like, yeah. As a reader, I tend to skim over that sort of stuff, and As a writer, I was just really keen to jump back into the action, because I feel like I kind of feel like when I was writing Heart of Mist, like I learned a lot from creating that, and I learned a lot from people's responses to that me and my readers like fast paced books, and Heart of Mist I don't think necessarily starts off very quickly, so that's kind of one of the reasons why this one just kicks off straight away. There's like no mucking around. There's no 3 months later. There's no a year later, and there's no like lengthy intros. We're right in it from the get go, and the readers have barely missed a second in the action. And I mean, just for the simple reason that that's the sort of books I like. So I thought, well, I'm going to write what I like.
No, I liked it. I liked it because it was just straight back in. I mean, I had to then, my brain had to go, okay, remember what's happened. Yeah. But there were little hints in there, you know, about what happened. Like, and it wasn't a recap way. It was done in a way that was part of the action, but going, oh, that's right. I remember what happened to Bleak in, you know, Heart of Mist and what happened. And all those kind of things. So there are enough hints to jog your memory back to it without the recap, which I think is good. Because if you have just read, and I've done this before, like binged a series, and you've just read the first book, you don't want all that recap stuff because you know it.
100%. Yeah. And I totally agree. And I'm glad you said that because I was conscious of like trying to find the right balance between just doing a big info dump where you learn everything that happened in the last book and then, you know, scattering those hints, but also so that say people who hadn't just read the first one were like, because I mean, I've got a shocking memory. If I've read a book a year ago, I'm like, what the hell happened in that book? I don't remember at all. But yeah, I did try to scatter some stuff in there, so I'm glad that it was effective in a way.
Well, I've read so many books this year, like more books than I've probably ever read in my life in a single year. I've read 70 books this year, so trying to
cut. Oh my god, you put me to shame. I don't even know how many I've read. I can probably count them on two hands.
I think the average is about five. So if you're doing two hands, you're doing pretty well.
All right, I'll take that on board then.
And so trying to remember each book sort of, you know, takes me a bit to sit down and go, okay, hang on, casting my mind back to this book. But once you get back into the characters, if you've really connected with the characters, I think it's easy to go back.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. I mean, have you read the Throne of Glass series by Sarah J. Maas?
I haven't yet, no.
Oh, okay, because that's a similar thing, sort of like there's a year or more in between each book and they're these ginormous fantasy books with like a sprawling cast of characters. And I recently just read her last one in a 7-book series. But yeah, you're absolutely right. Like if you connected with the characters, then you're kind of just like, yep, that person, yeah, I remember they did this, or you know, it's, or they just give you a feeling that you remember, and so you kind of ease back into it pretty comfortably.
Yeah, absolutely. And if you do enjoy a book, you do visualize everything that goes on. So once you're back into the setting and back into the character, it worked for me anyway. I felt like, yep, okay, I'm right back there. So
good.
Worked for me. Now, besides being a fantasy novel, the book has a pretty strong social conscience, I think. You know, I think it obviously deals with prejudice, but then there's also, you know, a same-sex relationship. It's about genocide and war, finding the courage to be yourself, not hiding who you are. Tell us about these issues and why they're important for you to include in this novel.
It's weird. I'm saying everything's weird at the moment. it's weird because, like, you know, I don't necessarily sit down at any point and go, right, I want to explore this theme. Like all of the stuff that you just mentioned, it just occurred quite organically. I remember, it's funny, like obviously I wrote Heart of Mist not last year, not the year before, 2016 I think I wrote it. And I remember in the midst of writing it, I was on the train like back from my then day job or something, and I was chatting to my friend Kyra. We were both doing NaNoWriMo. And I remember I was writing a scene on the train, and it was a scene between Henry and Athene. So that's the same-sex relationship that you mentioned. But at this point, nothing had, in my mind, like, happened between them or whatever. And I was writing this scene, and just this tension was there. And it made me like realize that they had this kind of saucy history together or whatever. And I remember like messaging my friend Kyra being like, I think Henry just came out to me on the train. And that's the sort of thing that I mean. Like I didn't go, yep, I want a same-sex relationship in this book. It just kind of organically happened. And I think similarly with the other themes that you mentioned, like all of them are really important themes. They're relevant in the world that we're living in the world that's already, you know, in the history that's already occurred. And so I think it's quite natural that, you know, even in young adult fiction, which we touched on in our last talk as well, I think, that we want to explore these issues because they're on our minds, they're relevant to what young people and old people are going through today. So, yeah, I think it just kind of occurs and it weaves itself in there organically, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I liked it. And I liked Henry and Athene too. I thought it was a really sweet relationship without it being, you know, that kind of focusing just on the same-sex relationship. It was just about their feelings and their past and how they were drawn together. So I thought that was nice.
Yeah, absolutely. I really like it because it's not, I think it's just quite subtle, like you learning about what's potentially gone on in the past between them. And they have this kind of magnetic tension between them, where they are always drawn together, but they're kind of butting heads over a lot of issues. I love writing that. It's really fun writing that for me. So I have a good time.
And I like human connections, you know, that aren't always bound by gender and all those kind of things. That if you have a human connection with someone, you have a human connection with them. You know, it doesn't matter about the gender or the age gap or whatever. Sometimes you just connect with people and you shouldn't have to explain it.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And I mean, that's kind of what I like about the Valian society. So Henry is the warrior queen of this kind of matriarchal society. And like, it's a non-issue there, mm-hmm. you know, it's nobody's like, oh, it's a same sex relationship. It's just kind of like, and I think it's not, like relationships in general in that society are not made a big deal of, like whether it's same sex or not. Like, so I kind of like that it's not necessarily this big challenge in this society. It just is what it is.
Mm. No, I liked that too. Now, the novel also shows how a person can be many things and a person can evolve over time. And we spoke briefly about Bleak, but I really loved one of the lines where she says, "Mist Dweller, Bleak, Ella Reese, Thief, Drunk, Gutter Rat." And she'd been called all these names, and she's also trying to figure out who she is as well. And I really liked the idea of a human being able to transform themselves so many times in their life.
Oh, yeah, I really love that point. I think anybody in life is constantly trying to, like, balance pressure from people they know and society around them about who they should be and, you know, who they can be, what their potential is and all this stuff. So we always have these, like, kind of outside forces, and then we're dealing with our kind of own inner conflicts, like who we want to be, what we think we're capable of. And what I kind of like about kind of her character arc, and actually like a fair few of the character arcs, is that it's not those like expectations that define us, but rather the actions that we take in the face of those expectations that make us who we are. So I love that Bleak is this deeply flawed character who struggles with, you know, all these names she's been called her whole life, but then also like who she is, like what her history is. And I think that inner struggle is probably one of her more relatable traits and more likable traits, because I have heard she's quite unlikable.
Oh, I don't think she's unlikable at all. I don't get that at all. I think having a complex character who, you know, has secrets and who has flaws, they're the most interesting people, I think.
Oh, absolutely. And that's why I like writing her so much. I mean, there's the four point of view characters, but she definitely gets the most screen time. I mean, in essence, it is her story. And that's one of the reasons why she is very complex, and she's very flawed, and she does, you know, have all these different labels that she's trying to come to terms with what actually applies to her and what doesn't.
And I just thought of something really cool that we could do, not now because I'm going to need some time to think about it, but a 6-word challenge to describe yourself over your lifetime.
Oh my God, that's daunting.
How cool would that be though? You know, and to think about the person you were a decade ago to the person you are now and try and compact that down into 6 words. I'm going to tweet it to you when I think of mine.
Okay.
And we'll start right. thinking.
Oh, so you get the head start. You get to think of yours. No, I'm going to get off the phone to you and then I'm going to do it.
Yeah. Well, I think it's really interesting to think about, you know, I think about the person I was in my 20s and I'm completely different, and think about, you know, how that still makes you an entire person. I'm finding this really interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think I thought a little bit about this, not too long ago, because I think I had an argument with someone actually, and they said like, oh, you've changed, like you're so what did they say? Not arrogant, but like that I stood up for what I thought, like, yeah, a lot more than I used to. And I realized that this is going off a very like weird track now, but
I like weird tangents.
But I kind of realized like that prior to Heart of Mist and prior to me becoming a full-time author, which is what I've always wanted to do, I lacked a lot of confidence. And so a lot of the time when I thought like I had a particular view about something, or like I really you know, disagreed with something, I silenced myself and I didn't you know, stand up for what I thought, or I worse kind of assumed, oh, I'm wrong. This person's right. Like I don't have the kind of confidence in my own viewpoint or my own intelligence to be able to challenge this person. And it was funny, like kind of thinking about that after this unfortunate argument was that I'd changed a lot in quite a short space of time. And I think it was because, you know, doing what I love had really boosted my confidence in a way that I hadn't experienced before. And so I think, you know, if I had to choose a word that was from, you know, say 5 years ago or something, and then I had to choose a word that described me now, they would be very different words. Mm. So it is a very interesting game. It's more of like a 1 a.m. a game, I reckon.
After a few more wines.
Yeah, maybe. Danny, they didn't know I was having wine.
Whoops.
Look, you really dumped me in it there.
It's funny because everyone drinks wine when they talk to me, and then everyone listens to the podcast while baking cupcakes. So I don't know, it's become a thing.
Wow, you've got like a real niche there.
People drink while speaking to me and bake cook while listening to us.
That's not a bad thing, I think.
It's great. I mean, what are life's greatest pleasures? You know, books, food, wine. So I think it's all going down the right track.
Yeah, absolutely.
Someone said to me yesterday they listened to the podcast while cleaning out their car, so that lacked a bit of glamour. But, you know, it doesn't matter. It's fine.
Whatever floats people's boats.
That's right. Cleaning your car is boring. I do think you need to listen to a podcast while you're doing that.
Yeah, or listen to some like really cool like Shania Twain or something.
Yeah. I feel like a woman.
Yeah.
Now, we talked about you being a full-time writer. How did you achieve this? Was it just the success of the first book? Are you doing other bits and pieces here and there? How have you achieved this amazing goal?
Well, when I was writing Heart of Mist, I had a part-time job as a social media manager for a really random business. But pretty much as soon as Heart of Mist came out, so that came out in August 2017, and then pretty much from January this year, I've been a full-time author, and I haven't taken on any freelance work just because. So I do still run Writer's Edit, which is the website me and my business partner run for authors, freelance writers, and self-publishers. So that's just like an advice platform that's got courses and a jobs board and stuff that we have to manage. And we've also just opened Tarlan Press, which is the small press I created in order to publish the Oromia Chronicles. We've just opened that for submissions. So we're accepting submissions, and we have some exciting news for next year, but I can't really go into that. But so apart from those two things, which are my side hustles, I guess, I'm full-time supporting myself off Heart of Mist and Reign of Mist now, and hopefully the third one. Hopefully it continues to go well. I think one of the things that's like enabled me to do that is that I've always treated my books like products in a small business, which is what any publisher would do as well. I think as an author with a traditional publisher, you get a little bit removed from that process, and there is kind of the romance of working with a publisher, and you don't see the behind the scenes, not really glamorous stuff like spreadsheets and budgets and outreach marketing templates and all of that kind of stuff. I've always gone into this series in particular as a business. So these books are products, and that's how I treat them. But also, I guess one of the biggest benefits of being an indie author is that you get much higher royalty rates. You have control over your own production schedule and your publishing schedule. Obviously, you have to do all the work that generally an entire company would do. It's not easy, but you then get all the rewards. That's the gist of it.
that's awesome. And I always see your feeds on Twitter, you know, about full-time writing. And I was very curious, and I'm sure other writers are as well, curious about how you've managed to achieve this, because I think it's fantastic. And so many people probably, you know, dream of doing that themselves. So it's nice that it can be done.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think a lot of hard work. I'm not making it sound like it was easy.
No, I think you make it like a good point that a lot of people wonder if it's possible. And I think that's kind of, you know, a part of the battle is that realizing that it is, because I remember going to my creative writing degree and them basically just saying, this won't put food on your table, this won't pay your rent, you know, this is like an artistic choice or whatever. And, you know, if that's how you want it to be, cool. But if you do want to make a living off it, it can absolutely be done. You've just got to be smart about it, and you've got to, you know, you've got to wear your artist hat, but you've also got to wear your business hat as well. So, yeah, I think knowing that it is possible and that it can be done, and then putting in the work in order to get to that point. Like, I mean, I've been a writer for a lot longer than I've been living full-time as a full-time author. So, you know, obviously it sounds really nice at the moment, but there were a lot of years where I was doing shitty jobs that I didn't want to be doing. I wanted to be writing full-time, but, you know, I just wasn't in the right place. I didn't have the right book, or I didn't have the right knowledge yet. So it is, it's kind of all about doing your research, putting your business hat on, and, you know, kind of having that persistence to get to that point.
But it's kind of just like being at uni, isn't it? When you had, you know, your shitty job and you're working your way up, that's what people at uni do. So you've kind of done that, your own self-university.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, you just kind of, you do the shitty job to pay your rent and pay for your dinner or whatever, and then, you know, you come home. And so, I mean, I used to work full-time as a copywriter, which for me is like the world's most soul-destroying job. I hated it. I mean, I was churning out product descriptions for really random stuff. I think one time I wrote product descriptions for an electric snake fence or something like that, you know? So, I mean, it's not glamorous, but, I mean, then I would go home and work on my book or work on my websites, or, you know, it's you've just got to make do until you can take that leap. So, I mean, I still – when Heart of Mist came out and it was doing quite well, I was like, I think I can make a go of it, but I'm not ready yet. So I waited a couple more months until I was like fairly certain that things were going to go a certain way, and then quit the part-time job I had and went full-time.
No, it's a really interesting journey, and it's very inspiring as well, I think.
Oh, good.
Now, what are you reading at the moment, or what have you read this year that has been a standout for you? I'm going to start asking authors about what they're reading, because I think, you know, it's really important if you're a writer to read as well. I'm sure you'd agree.
Oh, absolutely. I've actually really struggled this year with reading. I think maybe at a certain point I'd bitten off a little bit more than I could chew in terms of reading submissions, like people's manuscript submissions for Talent Press, running Writer's Edit, reworking my own books, writing my own books. So I definitely had, like, this has probably been my worst reading year in a long time, which is sad. But there were a bunch of books that really, I was actually doing like my year in review post that, like drafting that for one of my websites the other day. And I was talking about which books kind of like stuck with me this year. And it quite surprised me, because for the last few years, I've been all about YA fantasy. I've been absolutely addicted, like can't get enough. But this year, I think because I was reading and writing and editing so much YA fantasy, that my reading for leisure books turned down a more like literary path. So I recently just finished Normal People by Sally Rooney.
I've heard a lot of good things about that.
Oh, my goodness. Like, it just left me a broken, shattered mess, but like in the best possible way. I've been raving about it to anybody who will listen. I'm pretty sure I just came back from New Zealand and I made like about 5 people buy it. so yeah, that one had a big impact on me. Definitely hung around with me weeks after. And like, you know, when you read a really good book and then you can't start anything else because it's just not as good.
Yep.
So I definitely experienced that. I read Breath by Tim Winton's, which is an oldie, but I'd never read it before, and that was really beautiful, I thought. Isn't
it? Yeah. Did you see the film?
I did, and I thought that was really beautiful too.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, a lot of people said to me, oh, nothing happened. I'm like, what do you mean? Like, it was this really, like, deep and meaningful, like, exploration of these boys becoming men and, you know, like, all of these wonderful, like, complex relationships. I thought it was fantastic. Yeah.
I think it was one of those films which, you know, I must say is a rarity when it's adapted from a book that really captured the beauty of the book.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. I mean, Simon Baker did an amazing job.
He did.
I mean, it doesn't hurt that Australia's landscapes are pretty great.
Yeah, I agree.
And they make for a very beautiful cinematic experience.
But I think Tim Winton's writing is just beautiful and glorious, and I think the film captured that.
Oh, absolutely.
I liked that, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. So those two books are awesome. And another one that was quite different for me was actually, and you've actually interviewed him on your podcast, was my friend Ben Stevenson's
Greenlight.
Yeah, which, you know, Making a Murderer meets Gone Girl with just like all these awesome twists.
That opening, I loved that opening of Greenlight.
Yeah, absolutely fantastic. So
it's probably my favourite opening of the year.
Oh, really?
I just loved it so much. Yeah.
No, I really enjoyed that, and I went to the book launch and everything. It was all just very exciting. I'm really keen to read his next one. I'm hoping he sends it to me before people get to read it.
Yeah, me too. I'll have to bug him as well.
Yeah.
I read probably my standout for this year is Boy Swallows Universe by Trent Dalton.
Oh, I haven't read that one yet. Yeah. That's on my list. That's good.
Oh, that was one of – it's probably my standout. Well, it is my standout read for 2018. And like I said, I've read quite a few books this year.
Yeah.
And it just broke my heart and –
If I can have my heart broken again.
But kind of in a good way as well. Like, there's a lot of hope in it, but just his writing and the love in the book, like all different types of love, it's just beautiful. I just highly recommend it. And I'm like you, if I'm really enthusiastic about a book, I'm like, you must buy it. You must read it.
Yeah.
I don't
just harassing people on horse riding. Oh, this book, you gotta buy it.
And I've yet to read Bridge of Clay. I'm looking at it now. I went and saw Marcus Zusak at his talk in Sydney, and he just was, you know, such an articulate, wonderful man. And so I'm really looking forward to reading that. I'm going to try and do that over the Christmas break, but I have high hopes for that book.
that's on my list as well. I've heard wonderful things about that. And I'm really annoyed. They had a I live in Cronulla by the beach, and there's this bookshop called Best Little Bookshop in town, just up in the mall. And I think they had him there, or they hosted like an event at a bigger venue around here with him. And It was like a packed out event or whatever, and I couldn't go because I was in New Zealand, and that was the one thing that I was just like, oh, I wish I had been around for that because that looked really good.
Yeah. Now, there's some books that just stay with you forever, you know, and for me it's Cloud Street and it's Boy Swallows Universe and Elliot Perlman's Seven Types of Ambiguity. So there are just those books, like I love all books, or not all books, but I love really well-written books that are interesting, and all the books I do on the podcast, my criteria is I have to love them, otherwise, you know, I'm not going to do them because I can't, I'm one person. So my criteria is I just have to love them, but there are some books that just stay with you forever, right?
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. I think for me, Normal People will do that because it's one of those ones that over the course of like many years, it explores this relationship between two people. It's such a simple premise, but it's just so, so relatable, and it's so beautifully written in this like stark, honest way that really like captures these two people's like pull towards each other and then like clashing and all the kind of outside things that affect their relationship. And it, you know, it takes them from teenagers to, you know, adults, and it's just wonderful.
That, I love
put
it.
That on your list.
You've sold it to me, and I've written it down on this bit of paper because I'm going to read it now. I love it when someone can convince me that I should read a book. I'll just add it to the pile. I don't know. I need to clone myself to read them all, but that's definitely on my list.
That's how I feel too. Oh, and I actually just I started Kite Runner, so I spoke to someone while I was away. And we basically had the same conversation you and I are having, and I sold Normal People and he sold Kite Runner.
Okay. I'm going to throw a spanner in the works here. I loved A Thousand Splendid Suns.
Oh, you didn't like Kite Runner.
Oh, no, I did, but I loved A Thousand Splendid Suns even more, and I wish I had mentioned that before in the books that kind of, you know, stay with me forever, because that is one that just has stayed with me forever. It is so beautiful.
Oh, okay. I'll have to put that on the list.
I'm sorry. Yeah, put it on the list.
I think I'm about 60% of the way through The Kite Runner.
He's a beautiful writer. Beautiful.
Oh, beautiful. And it's already, like, I've been on the verge of tears probably five times already.
Yeah, absolutely. And a Thousand Splendid Suns will do the same. I remember ending it and closing the book and like, oh, I miss these characters already. I miss them.
Oh, that's how I felt after Normal People. And I just kind of sat there and I felt like immensely sad that it was over.
Wow.
And just like incredibly moved by the whole thing. And yeah, oh, I really need to start reading some happy books though.
Well, I'm just looking at my shelf and I can't help you with that. Sorry.
Oh, great.
Nothing happy here.
Right, sad books all the time.
That's right, that's right. This has been great, and I love how we've gone off on this tangent of book club. And I'd, you know, love to also hear from people who listen to this episode and talk about books that have, you know, stayed with them and changed their life in some way, because we have rambled on. So it's kind of gone into the Helen's book of, you know, Reign of Mist, and also our own little mini book club. So that's been pretty cool.
That's been heaps cool. What's better than that?
Not much, I don't think. We're both very much book enthusiasts.
Yeah.
Look, it's been so awesome to chat to you again, and I hope we can speak again when you have your third novel and we make this like kind of a regular catch-up.
That sounds good to me.
Definitely. And by the time we speak again, we'll have read each other's recommended books and we can then chat about that.
Yeah, oh, it'll be. We'll go off on another tangent. We'll be here for like 3 hours next time.
Sorry, guys, this is an extended episode. You'll have to make many, many cupcakes with this episode.
Yeah, drink many, many wines.
That's all, yeah, as we will be.
Yeah.
Well, thank you again so much, Helen, and I hope people are enjoying Reign of Mist as much as Heart of Mist. I certainly did, and I'm really looking forward to the third one. Does it have a name?
It's not been announced yet. Okay. It does have a name, but it's not been announced yet.
Can I guess that it's Something of Mist?
Yeah, I think it has to be, right? Like, you can't mess with that pattern on the last one.
You should have a competition to see if someone could guess the first.
I actually did that with Reign of Mist. I had a I mean, not like a big competition or anything, but there was I did a blog post about it, and had people guessing in the comments what the what the title would be. I don't think anybody got it in the end, though. Really? There were some cool titles that made me go, oh, maybe I should have called it that. But
did you steal one for the third one?
No. Not
I love that. I love that. All right, I am going to get back to you on your 6-word autobiography, but I'm going to think of mine first. So.
Oh, okay, pressure's on. All right.
Thank you so much for joining us, Helen. It's been awesome.
Oh, thanks so much for having me. I had a blast.